All right, so I'm going to answer. It's a rhetorical question, so you don't need to answer me back if you don't want to. But have you ever been your own worst enemy? And the answer is yes, you have been your own worst enemy. We've all made decisions, things that we've said, done, that we decided to do and realized probably fairly quickly, maybe down the road a little bit, that was a really poor decision, and we kind of put our own selves in that situation. I tried to think of an example, and I'm going with a safe example because a lot of my examples just were too embarrassing to share with you this morning. So when I was in seminary here down at Lincoln, about my third year or so, I took a class, and it was an online class before there were online classes. This was before Zoom and all the other things that you could do online. So I got DVDs of all of the lessons, right? You were supposed to watch all the DVDs. Yeah, there were some papers, I think, to fill out. And at the end, though, the big project was a research paper at the end, a fairly large research paper. And I was feeling pretty good and went through the DVDs pretty quickly, got all the assignments and everything kind of taken care of. And I was kind of pushing off the research paper so I could focus on my other classes and everything else going on in life. And I kept pushing off the research paper. But I thought, I have plenty of time, right? And so about 3 weeks, actually, maybe even 4 weeks before the end of the semester, again, still thinking I had plenty of time, I decided, okay, I probably should check when this research paper is actually due. And so I finally sit down and pull out my syllabus, and I pull it up, and I look at the date, and the date was like 2 days before that actual date. And like I said, I had plenty of time, right? 3 weeks, 4 weeks before the end of the semester, I should have plenty of time to turn this research paper, and already it was 2 days late. And so I'm scrambling, calling the professor, calling all these, whoever I can to try to figure out what can I do to try to salvage this. Because if I fail the class, I'm actually in a lot of trouble because I could lose my scholarship, and then I'd have to figure out a way to pay for seminary and all these kinds of things as well. And so I was really frantic. I had a real positive resolution. I had a really gracious professor. I didn't get, it did lower my GPA just a little bit, but the fact that I was able to turn it on and not fail the class was significant. But that was one of those things where I just didn't pay attention. I was thinking I have plenty of time, right? Those are famous last words. I have plenty of time to figure that out. I was my own worst enemy by not keeping track of that and paying attention to that. And this was also before smartphones and Google Calendars and all that stuff, too, to keep reminding me of things. I guarantee I wouldn't miss that today. But we all do that. We all have situations, relationships, choices, decisions to make, all these kinds of things where we make bad decisions, right? And you, and I'm going to focus on you, but I do this too. You and I have participated in all of our bad decisions, right? Every single one of our bad decisions, every single one of our choices that we've made that was bad, we participated with. In fact, looking back, I listen to a lot of Andy Stanley and other pastors, but Andy Stanley especially talks a lot about this, and he says, if you're going to go into a new job, a new marriage, a new situation, a new relationship, thinking that it's going to be different this time, the only way it's ever going to be different is if you're different that time, right? If you change the way you approach it, you change the way you go into it. Otherwise, you're still involved in all of your situations. It's going to be the same outcome if you're still involved. And so with that, so we also know that every bad decision or a single bad decision is always the first step towards becoming our own worst enemy. And it quickly can snowball, right? And you can all think of situations in our own life. You can look at your family or neighbors or whatever, and you can see this happening, right? It's one bad decision leads to another, and it snowballs so quickly. And it doesn't take long for us to become our own worst enemy and, end up failing whatever class. I don't remember what the class was now, even. Something theology, intro to theology, systematic theology, something like that. Anyway, and you end up failing a class because you're not paying attention to things, maybe. And so what we're going to do over the next 3 weeks is we're going to talk about what we're calling preemptive habits. Habits to think about before we get into situations, before we have those decisions, choices, dilemmas that we have to make a decision. And so I'm going to give you some of these habits. These are something that I've borrowed from someone else as well. So these definitely don't originate with me. I find that I've used them here and there. I'm not as successful as I'd like to be with them, but they're going to be helpful, hopefully. But in the end, and I just want to make sure I highlight this, in the end, obviously, everything needs to go back to our relationship with God. All right, you can have all the tools, all the habits, all the things in place, know exactly what you should do, and attempt to do those things. But if that relationship with God isn't healthy and isn't strong, all of the habits, practices, everything else in the world aren't going to really ultimately help. In fact, we're going to be forcing it. We're going to be kind of tricking ourselves, even with the best of habits, if God isn't the foundation to all of this as well. And so I just want to highlight that as we move forward through these habits as well. And so the first habit we're going to talk about is called pay attention to the tension, which is a really fun thing to say. So if you go home and you just say it to yourself, because it's fun to say. All right, pay attention to the tension. I was going to make you guys say it to me this morning, but the fact that you're here and you brave the weather, I'm going to give you a break. So pay attention to the tension. Again, it's just this idea. We all have choices, decisions, dilemmas, things that we have to decide. And sometimes, maybe even often, we feel a sense of tension behind that. We feel uneasy. We feel like, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure about this, I want to do this or do that, but it just kind of doesn't feel quite right. And what this habit is all about is paying attention to what that tension feels like. And it's this idea of don't start selling, but to start listening. And the idea behind, again, not selling ourselves on it is that we know that the cost ends up being more than we ever expect, right? And so I want you to think about your last large purchase, right? And maybe a purchase where you went and talked to a salesman, right? And whether it's I always think of a used car salesman, and don't want to be offensive to the used car salesman, but you know that's kind of the stereotype that I think of a lot of times. But we think about the last person that we talked to that was selling us something, and you think about the way that they speak to you and they talk to you, and they have a certain way that they speak and talk to us in order for us to buy whatever they're selling. The thing is that we also have like an internal salesman that speaks to us, that tries to talk us into things that maybe we aren't really all that interested in buying, but we try to tell ourselves that we should buy it. And so if you think about, again, maybe a last purchase or last thing that you bought or the last decision, major decision you had to make, what did you do to tell yourself, to convince yourself to do that? Maybe you said, and I do this all the time, maybe you said, well, I'll figure it out later. Right, I say, you know, I don't have the money to buy this maybe right now, but I've got a credit card and I'll figure it out later. Right? Does anybody? I'm the only one that does that probably. No. Okay, a couple of you. All right, sounds good. Glad I'm not the only one. Right? I'll figure it out later. And so I just kind of push it off. Right? The tension's there. I know I don't have the money, but I'm going to go ahead and do the credit card, and so I'll figure it out later. Right? And that's the nature of credit cards, I guess. Anyway, maybe you tell yourself, oh, it's been a hard week. I deserve this. Right? Right? You guys do that. Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. Sometimes I say, I've had such a good week, I'm going to treat myself, right? It can go both ways, right? And so you sell yourself on whatever decision, whether it's buying something, whether it's a relationship or a situational choice, whether it's maybe it's a career choice, something that we decide and we say, I deserve it, or I've earned this, or you know, it's been a hard week, or I'll figure it out later, or all these kinds of things we sell ourselves on. But if a salesman, going back to that used car salesman or someone that's selling us something, if they use the same tactics that we use on ourselves, we would just walk away from them, right? If a used car salesman says, you'll figure it out later, don't worry about payments, you'll figure it out later, right? You would walk away from them, right? At least I hope we would. I may not, but, right, if we use the same tactics, the same tactics we use on us that we use on ourselves, we wouldn't listen. We would walk away. We'd be like, this is ridiculous. You know, what are you talking about? But we sell ourselves on decisions, on choices, on things all the time to be able to make ourselves, you know, to get the things that we think that we want at that time. And so the nature of this habit is to stop selling ourselves on things and to start listening. In fact, the moment we start selling ourselves on something, we should just hit pause. When we're trying to convince ourselves, when we try to say, okay, I should do this or that or this, we need to just pause. It's okay to say no in a moment, right? I have a hard time making decisions in a moment. And so I'll a lot of times say I'll agree to something, even though down the road I'll be like, why did I agree to that? And so we just need to sometimes say no. No, I can't make a decision. No, I'll get back to you. No, I can't do that right now. And just pause and slow down a little bit. And the story that we're going to look at this morning really, I think, reveals this well. In fact, I think it's really a neat story because it shows that God it may look like things have put into our place or into our laps or into our lives, but they may not actually be from God like we maybe have thought originally. And so if you have a Bible or Bible app, we're going to be in 1 Samuel 24. And 1 Samuel 24 is a story that I think all of us have probably heard before, maybe a few different times. In fact, I preached on it not a few years ago, I think. And so this is another story of Saul and David. And so we know Saul, first king of Israel, was anointed by Samuel and told that he was going to be the first king of Israel and unite Israel, the tribes of Israel, into a kingdom, into a monarchy. And so Saul's the first king, and he's doing all right for a while, but then all of a sudden this young man, or he turns away from God. And so God sends Samuel to anoint David, the shepherd David, and David very quickly rises in popularity, right? We know he's got his military success. We know from the story of David and Goliath, the giant Goliath, when he slays Goliath, his popularity just soars. And so David's becoming more and more popular and gaining, you know, whatever the polls are, the popularity polls that they do on people, compared to Saul. And Saul's popularity is just plummeting quickly. And so there's that tension being created between Saul and David. And not only the popularity thing, but the fact that David's going to replace Saul is obviously going to create tension in their relationship. All these other things happening in this, you know, dynamic between their relationship, just so much tension. In fact, it gets to the point where Saul just wants to kill David, just wants to eliminate, get rid of him. And so he attempts to kill David a few different times. And in the middle of, in this story, in 1 Samuel 24, we're in the middle of one of those times where Saul is just pursuing David, going after him, finding any way that he can to eliminate him. And so as David, again, popularity is rising, he's gaining this small army of followers, of mighty men, and Saul's decided that he's just going to go and he's going to take care of him. And we see that in the first few verses of 1 Samuel 24. And it says this, when Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 men, or chosen men, out of all of Israel and went to seek David and his men in the front of the wild goat's rock. And he came to the sheepfold by the way, where there was a cave. And Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost part of that cave. So again, we see the context of the story of Saul pursuing David. And it said 3,000 men, right? And these are the best men, chosen men. David has, and I don't remember the exact number, but this is Saul's is five times the size of David's army. Okay, so he's taking five times as many people to go after David, to just eliminate David, which reveals not only his hatred for David and how badly he wants to get rid of him, but also a certain amount of paranoia, that Saul is just so filled with rage and so paranoid that he's going to go to any length he can to eliminate David and to remove him from the picture. But we see also that Saul, as he has to go to the restroom, we'll just leave it at that, he goes into this cave. And it's interesting because, you know, the king can stop everybody and say, okay, everybody stop, I got to use the restroom. And that's, you know, he's in charge, he can do that. I don't know what everybody else has to do, but it's simply amazing. In fact, maybe even providential, and just on, you know, there's no word I think to describe the amount of improbability of this occurring, that Saul is going to walk into this exact cave that David and his men are hiding, right? There's no way that it almost seems like there's no way this happens by chance. There was a couple weeks ago that the Powerball got up, I think, to like 570 million or something like that here recently. And so I looked at the numbers of winning, you know, the chances of winning that Powerball, you know, are so, so slim. In fact, the average of winning the Powerball is 1 in 292,201,338. So if you buy 292,201,338 Powerball tickets, you should win. That's the idea behind that. To go into the same cave that David was hiding in, for Saul to walk in that same cave, I think the numbers are even, you know, I would say twice or three times that. I mean, it's just so, so improbable for David or Saul to walk into that exact cave. And so most of us, in fact, I would probably say that's God providing for David in that situation. In fact, I would say that God was divinely, divinely stepping into that world to somehow get Saul into that cave. And so knowing that and keeping that in the back of their mind, David is seeing that same idea. In fact, David's men are seeing that same exact thing, and that's what they say in the next few verses. But it would seem that God had delivered his enemy directly into his hands. God had provided Saul and given him basically on, here David, here's Saul on a silver platter kind of a thing. And again, David's men see this, and they say this. They say, "Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will give you your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. Then David arose, and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Again, David's men see this as God providing, as God giving David Saul in this situation. And so David acts. He steps up and he goes and he cuts off the corner of Saul's robe. And there could be a couple different things happening here. First, the cutting off a corner of a robe in that culture was like was the sign of a divorce, and so a separation between two parties. And I think that may be part of what David's thinking here. He's going to cut off the corner of the robe and show the distinction between these two men. But it also was a sign of superiority and saying, I'm going to cut off the corner of your robe, showing that I am actually the rightful ruler. I have the authority over you. And showing Saul in that instance. And so just this act alone, it seems like it's, kind of a small thing for us maybe. But in that culture, to do that would have been a significant act, an act of aggression to a large extent against Saul in this situation. And so, but immediately after this is how David feels. Verse 5, it says, and afterward, David's heart struck him, because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way. And so immediately David felt a tension, right? He was conscious stricken. And he felt this idea of maybe guilt or whatever. And he immediately says to his men, okay, we can't do this. We can't attack Saul. We can't go after him. We can't kill him. And the primary reasons David gives him, and it's enough of a reason, in fact, but the primary reason, maybe the only reason, is he's the Lord's anointed. God had chosen Saul to make him king of Israel. And so it was only God, by right, by decree, by law, whatever, that only God could remove Saul from that position. No man in Israel, no woman in Israel, no person in that country of that nation had any authority to go and remove Saul from his position. It was only God's role and God's power and authority to do that. And so immediately David feels that tension of knowing that this is God's anointed. And to go against Saul was to go against God. But if just imagine for just a moment, and I don't know if this is a little too gory for you, but just imagine for a moment that David decides to off him. That David decides that he's going to just, instead of coming out, and we'll just read that in a second, instead of coming out of that cave with just a corner of Saul's robe in his hand, he comes out of the cave with Saul's head in his hand. And if he decides to kill Saul and take him out, those 5,000 men that had been following Saul, those 5,000 mighty warriors that had been coming after him to go after David, would immediately switch allegiance. They would immediately move over from Saul's side to David's side. There would be a fairly smooth transition of power then from the first king of Israel to the second king of Israel. And there would be minimal bloodshed, there would be no civil war, and everything would just transition very smoothly to David if David is able to go and conquer Saul in this way. And so it seems like on the outside and from the human perspective, and I think that's such an important aspect of the story, is from a human perspective, for David to kill Saul would have been maybe the simplest way to handle this. From a military perspective, from a national, country-to-country kind of perspective, international perspective, to just remove Saul from the picture would have been the smoothest, simplest, most logical way to handle this. But David knew that because of the tension he felt in his heart, because of the nature of what was going on, and because of who Saul was as God's anointed, that the most human, most natural, most logical decision isn't necessarily the right one. In fact, it would have still been a very wrong decision. And so this is what happens in verse 8. It says, afterward, David also arose and went out of the cave and called after Saul, my lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of the men who say, behold, David seeks your harm. Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you into my hand in the cave, and someone told me to kill you, but I spared you. And I said, I will not put out my hand against the Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. And as surprising as it was that Saul walks into that exact cave, to me, the way that David responds is still rather surprising. Because if you imagine David with his, and well, I don't know if he had, what, 800 men or something like that, maybe not even that, 600-700 men. David steps out of this cave and he's facing Saul and 3,000 men. And David decides that he's going to holler after Saul, because all it would take is an archer standing behind Saul to take David out at that point, right? But David still stands up and says, I have something to tell you, Saul. And he holds up the corner of his robe and he makes this pronouncement and he talks to David, or talks to Saul, but not only just talks to him, he lays himself down prostrate in one of the most vulnerable positions imaginable. And he says, I am so trusting. In fact, I think it's a nature of trust and belief that God is providential and in that situation, that David is willing to lower himself into that position. And not only does he not kill Saul, but he puts himself into this position of honor and respect of Saul. And then he explains to him exactly the opportunity that he had. You know, he shows the corner of his shoulder and basically says, I could have taken you out. You need to stop listening. David says, you need to stop listening to the men that say that I'm trying to harm you. Because obviously, if I meant to harm you, I could have easily harmed you. And so he's trying to change the relationship. He's trying to change the dynamic. And he continues on, jumping down to verse 12. And he says, David continuing talking here, he says, may the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you. But my hand shall not be against you. As the proverbs of the ancients say, out of the wicked comes wickedness. But my hand shall not be against you. David decided at that point not to use Saul's bad behavior as an excuse for his own bad behavior. As easy as it would have been to eliminate Saul, as easy as it would have been to say, well, God provided him to me. God gave him into my hands. God is the one that brought him into this cave. And easy as it would to rationalize, to sell himself on this idea, David knew that it was wrong. David knew that it went against the ultimate desires of who God is and what he desired for his kingdom and for his world. And so David, again, didn't use Saul's bad behavior as an excuse. In fact, when he uses that proverb, he says, out of the wicked comes wickedness. David is saying, just because you've done something so terrible to me doesn't give me the right to do something so terrible to you. And there's resolution to this story, and I'm going to let you read it on your own, because then I know you're all so excited about what exactly happens. And so you're going to go home right now and read the rest of 1 Samuel 24. In fact, read the whole rest of 1 Samuel, because it is really fascinating and interesting stuff. But I'll let you do that on your own. But what I want us to take with us from this is the image that we see here, and the tension that David felt, and the tension that we can often feel in our own lives, in our own experience. And that when we feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't, or, you know, that doesn't quite feel right, or I don't know that I should go down that path. And when we feel that tension, we need to stop and we need to figure out what's going on. In fact, kind of the three-part process with this habit is to hit pause, stop selling, start listening. The articles that I've been writing for the Argus the last couple weeks have kind of followed this pattern as well. And so if you want a little bit more practical things and that kind of stuff, there's a little bit in there. But the nature of this habit, the nature of all this, again, obviously goes back to our relationship with God, but it really is these practical things that we see David doing. He stopped trying to convince himself. In fact, he stopped listening to his men who are trying to sell him on something, and he started to listen to his own heart and his own conscience. And ultimately, I would say that the Spirit of God speaking to him as well. And part of it is we all need to figure out the story that we want to tell. Because if you think about David and the story that he has to tell from this experience, or the story he gets to tell, if his grandkids run up to him, you know, in 20, 30, 40 years or however long, his grandkids run up to him and start talking to him about, tell us how you became king, tell us how you became king. I don't think David wants to tell the story of how Saul walked into this cave to use the restroom and David, you know, beheaded him and became king, right? right? That's probably not the story he wants to tell his grandkids. But the way that the story unfolds and the fact that David is, you know, righteous and does what's right is a great story for him to be able to tell his grandkids, and the story that we can read in 1 and 2 Samuel as well, or the end of 1 Samuel. And so we have a story to tell as well. And if somebody asked us, well, tell us how this happened, or tell us what happened here, you know, all these things that we, you know, experience throughout life, tell us all these stories, and we say, well, I made this decision or I made that decision. We want to tell the best story that we can. We want to have the most positive experience and positive story for those around us. Now, the unfortunate thing is all of us have choices. All of us have stories that we don't want to tell. Like I talked about in the beginning, there's lots of embarrassing stories that I don't want to tell you. But that's the nature of becoming our own worst enemy and the tension that we feel with that as well. And so a couple last things to kind of highlight here as we close, or a question, I guess, to start with, is the question, is there a tension that deserves my attention? Is there a tension, if you want to, again, it's fun to say, so if you want to say it with me, that's fine. Is there a tension that deserves my attention? And I know I have tension right now in my life and things that I need to focus on and figure out why I have that tension, and I'm sure all of us have a certain amount of that as well. And what we need to do from that, again, as practical application, is saying, I'm going to pause until I pinpoint the cause. Just pausing, just slowing down, just stopping for a little while until I figure out exactly why it's there. Why is that tension there? Why do I feel this guilt or this, you know, this agony or this anxiety towards it? And the second thing to do if we have that tension is to explore rather than to ignore that tension. Or our conscience. Why is my conscience feeling this way? Why do I feel this tension? Explore the reason rather than just to ignore it. Because that's what we do most of the time. We just ignore it. Oh, I feel a little tension or agony or anxiety. I'm just going to push it away. That can go away. I'm just going to go on. But if we explore that and we look into it, when we pray about it, when we invite God into that situation, it becomes much more clear the decision that we have to make. And none of us, I imagine, we'll probably ever face the same dilemma that David experiences here, right? If somebody walks into our life and we have the choice between, you know, eliminating them or letting them live. If you ever experience that, let me know, because I'd really be interested in hearing that story. But I don't think any of us are going to be at that extreme, but we do all face that tension in those decisions and the things that we have to choose and make move forward. And the way that David handled it, by slowing down, by allowing that tension to help him be focused, to allow God to speak into his heart, is a great example for us to be able to slow down and look at that as well. And so pausing until we find the cause and exploring rather than ignoring, again, just such a small, simple step that we can take, but I just really want to challenge us with that this week as well. We'll talk about more habits next week, but again, just most importantly, we allow God to speak into our hearts and to our minds and to always go back to that relationship with him. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you so much for the relationship that we have with you. We thank you so much that you have preserved these words of and the story of David and Saul, and that we see David making a godly, honoring decision. And not that David is a perfect example for us to look to all the time, but the fact that he slowed down, that he looked at the situation, that he was able to just make an extreme choice of grace and of mercy and of loving you. I pray that our decisions focus on that as well, as we think of this as kingdom people, as we think of this as how does my choice impact your kingdom, God. We can look at that tension, we can look at that stress, and we can start find steps to move forward into that well. And I pray for your grace in that as we work through that this week. In Jesus' name.